welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Here is your host, Chris Tatro.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. We are in season two now. Today, we have Eric and Megan Mattson in their new home this year. And we also have Dale Mord from Rogue Productions. So how are you guys doing today?
We're doing awesome. How are you guys?
Doing really good. How's life been down in the new house? Why don't you tell us about your guys' new house and all the changes that have happened in the last half a year?
We're coming up on 1 year, August 1st, since we moved into our new house. We moved from the small city of Freeborn out to the county. So now we have some acreage out here.
And we're starting our little funny farm, is what the community members are saying. We've added two ducks and a rabbit and a little hamster since we've moved out here, on top of our two dogs and our three cats. So, yeah, that's... I don't know what's next, right?
The girls like it though?
Yeah, they did struggle though right away when we came out here, just because they've only ever known like city life. And so being out in the country, I mean, it was exciting. But then once we moved in and we're here for a couple weeks, reality kicked in and they were like, oh, where's all of our friends? And I was like, well, we're going to have to invite them over now. They're not just right next door down the street. So yeah. That was a little adjusting.
Yeah, a little more work, but at the same time, a little bit more comfort being out in the country and a little more freedom, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
It's beautiful. The sunrises to the sunsets. Oh, it's awesome. And it's like Eric said, it's not that big of a piece of property, so it's not a lot to maintain. And we don't have any like buildings or whatnot. So yeah, it's very manageable. We're happy with it.
Exactly.
You guys said that you're getting ready to do some renovations too, right?
Yeah. So it's been a struggle to try and find a contractor to want to sign on to help with our remodeling for Eric's handicap accessibility needs. Mainly it's just like the bathrooms that need to be revamped. And then the entrance to our house needs to be redone. And then also we're going to add on another entrance / exit to the house, which will also have a deck added onto that as well. So that'll be nice for us to be able to sit out there.
Yeah. A little bit more adaptability. So you're having difficulties with contractors that want to sign on to do that, you said?
Yeah, because we have to work with the state of Minnesota for Eric's disability benefits, and they just don't want to do the extra paperwork per se, I guess. And some contractors are too booked up as well. But I think we have a contractor that has, everything's been going smooth so far. So fingers crossed, and we can just keep the train a trucking.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, hopefully you guys get that figured out. I know paperwork can be a bear, but especially with government, you know, but at the same time, at least there's programs there that'll help you guys out. So hopefully everything gets squared away here soon. So.
Yeah.
Well, Dale, hi, how are you?
Hi.
What's going on? You've had changes too.
Yeah. Just plugging away. I was just telling the Mattsons, you know, the dock is going good. We just need to get everything filmed. We need to get some more interviews done and some more B-roll, and we should be set for later this year.
That's good. Yeah, the dock is well on the way. There's a lot of content to go through and storyboard to go through, and the editing process can be cumbersome. I understand that, but I know that we've had a pretty awesome trip with Eric up to St. Paul Island, and Eric had a very successful trip there. So I think we're going to start talking a bit about Eric's legacy trip with his King Eider and how that went. So, you know, the days leading up to, you know, it kind of seemed a bit surreal for me to actually, you know, think that we're finally here. But it was, you know, a long time coming. You know, we got canceled for his trip in 2022. And I thought the year felt like 5 years waiting till 2023 to me. But Eric, so tell me, what did you think about the days coming leading up towards the hunt? What did you feel like? What was the excitement? What kind of things did you do?
Couldn't believe we were actually going, I guess.
Yeah, I remember getting text messages from you probably daily about getting to go. And I know Dale was telling me that you're pretty jacked and a lot of communication about the excitement that was going on there. So I know that we did a podcast or live stream leading up to it too. And I think that was pretty cool for people to check in and see how you guys were doing and then to gauge the excitement for the upcoming trip. But so what were your thoughts? You guys ended up getting into the vehicle to come up with Uncle Paul and Jeremy, and you guys met us at the airport. What was your thoughts when you got there?
Just how many people were helping to make this trip a reality?
Yeah, it's quite a few moving pieces and a lot of support from different individuals, which was fantastic. You know, one of the cool things that happened at the airport there was, you know, Carol Evan came out, did a little story with Eric and Megan and about the trip specifically. And a lot of supporters that came out. The big shout out to the airport PD, you know, for being there and helping out through security. TSA was great to us. We even had some federal air marshals that were hanging out and helping out with Eric and getting through there. And
remember, you guys said every time we fly, Eric, we're bringing you with it. This is how we get treated.
Oh man, it was probably the easiest TSA I've ever been through in my life.
Oh yeah.
So I'm traveling with Eric from here forward always.
Yep. Or I'll just say I'm the adopted son.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. Ever since we've flown a couple times since then, and it is a breeze.
Nice.
We always got a joke about, you know, what happened to him, but having that handicap accessibility card or his wheelchair has helped us a lot in certain situations.
And I was telling my wife that I need to do that TSA pre-check, but I just told him I'm going to come with you guys instead every time now. So just TSA slide right through.
Is key. I think it's the only way to travel. I make fun of everyone that doesn't have it.
Yeah. I'll get it.
I'll take the Mattson way a little. I'll take that every time if I can.
You just need a wheelchair. Just need a wheelchair.
Well, Dale probably could use one. So
yeah. And a helmet. I need a helmet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so we got through the actual TSA side of things, and the airport PD gave us a nice little spot to hang out and be away from the crowds. But then we went and visited Eric's favorite spot, place to eat for the most part there. Went over to Buffalo Wild Wings. They cleared out an area for us. And then not much longer after that, it was time to go board the plane. So tell us about what happened when we went down to the plane, Eric.
That is announced on the intercom that we were on board and we're taking off to do our legacy hunt. And then outside, one of my friends, a state trooper, they were on the tarmac with their lights on, sending us off.
And the Waseca PD was there too.
Yep.
I was there. I got to watch it. So we rode like next to you guys while you guys were on the plane. We were like driving with the lights on. And as you were going up, you know, we were right there. So that was pretty cool. Very unheard of.
Yeah, and there's an honor guard that was waiting for you to board the plane too. I remember there's lines of officers on either side right next to the gate that gave you a nice send off, and it was pretty moving. Dale, what were your thoughts about all of it? I mean, you guys were behind the camera a lot and trying to capture everything you could. What were your thoughts this whole time?
Yeah, it was just it was surreal. I just remember, you know, having the camera up because I was rocking the big shoulder rig, which I kind of hides my face, thank God, because I'm sitting there tearing up the entire time. There was so much happening that I just to take it all in, and it was and then thinking back of all the day I met Eric, we didn't even really actually get to meet any of you guys. It was back in 2020 watching you get off that plane. And, you know, where your physical limitations were, and then now seeing you get onto another plane to go do what I knew what we were going to do. You didn't really know yet. It was just to see it all come together, and obviously almost, what was it, 2 years later, 3 years later?
Yeah, three.
Yeah, and so it's just, it was a lot. It was a lot. And as the camera guy, I'm not supposed to matter, right? But, you know, seeing it all from the big picture is really surreal.
Yeah, like you said, you've been there since day one he landed, and you've been in and out of his, you know, journey throughout the whole time, every month and whatnot. And so you've really, you both have really watched him progress.
And you guys are easy people to get along with, you know, so it's not like we're just doing this trip and not talking in between, you know, we check in on each other and it's a family, you know, it's something different that, you know, most people who get documentaries, I'm sure they grow close, but this is different. You know, there's definitely a, you know, personal element to everything, especially because of line of work, you know, and just the family that's there. But as you know, the documentary and the trip has progressed and the ups and the downs and the, everything, you know, it's been easy to get to know you guys and be able to communicate.
I still come downstairs about once a week and just look at the mountain, just think, holy crap, we actually went there and did it. Came back with him.
I know. I think about it all the time too. I know I saw earlier Dale was showing you some photos from when we were up there that Jeff gave us, and I have mine over here in my office, and every time I walk by it, man, it just makes me smile ear to ear. So it's a phenomenal. There it is. Picture of all of us. Yeah. So cool part too is, you know, Eric's uncle, Paul, you know, he was obviously with for the hunt as well as his friend, Jeremy. And they came with through obviously at the airport and helped out with a lot of different things. But it was pretty cool to be able to watch them and their reaction to everything, to the support that you were given that day and being able to help you. And it was kind of the cool part too, was that our friends at Delta Airlines actually gave us a tour of one of their facilities. Was that after we came back, Megan? And yep. Eric? After we yep. came back. And, but they helped us out through the process too at the airport. And we actually got put on a brand new airplane. It was super nice. We sat in Comfort Plus, and Eric got a nice roomy seat up in the front there, and they treated us very well. And the pilot gave Eric a huge shout out, and all the stewards and stewardesses were awesome throughout the whole flight. But then we started on our 6-hour flight up to Anchorage, Alaska, and it was pretty incredible. And we all knew that Eric was super excited because he didn't sleep at all. He was wide awake and just jacked. And Eric, I mean, you take a couple naps here and there throughout the day, right?
I try to, yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, you were pretty excited if you weren't napping on the way there, right?
Yeah.
It was a pretty late flight, too.
It was a late flight. Yeah, I think, what time did we land in Alaska? Well, we went back in time, so I think
11?
Yeah, 10 or 11. It was a quick turnaround. But we landed in Alaska, Anchorage, and it was dark out. And as we land, it was kind of cool. We have a friend up there who is now our state director for Alaska, John Reese. I met John Reese in Texas with a youth deer hunt, and John actually came and helped us out with our luggage. As you can imagine, six people and camera equipment, there was quite a bit of luggage and things to bring with as we get out there. And it was nice to have John come over, load up the back of his truck and drive it over to the hotel and get everyone to the rooms. But what were your thoughts when we got that part, Eric, when we got to Anchorage?
Just that, holy crap, this is going to happen like tomorrow.
What about the weather? Is it cold?
The weather wasn't really cold then, no. I just thought Charles always says, if you don't like cold and wet, don't bother coming, you know? He tells it like it is.
It's true. But then he forgot that we're Minnesotans and we're kind of used to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really nice. We got to our hotel, quick turnaround. I think we grabbed some dinner. I think we had a drink or two, and then we all went to bed. And then it really started. As we kept inching our way closer and closer to where we're going to be, you know, it was just the excitement kept building. And it was pretty incredible. I don't think I slept very well that night, just thinking about all the things that were happening and the excitement for the next day and getting out to St. Paul Island. And then also freaking about things that I might have forgot for the trip. I was trying my best.
I know Paul still denies ordering an extra medium pizza at like 3 o'clock in the morning, but I'm like, Paul, they have you on camera. You were there, man.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll talk about that more here soon. Paul had a good time. that was on the way back, but yeah, it, that was pretty funny. Yeah. video and photos don't lie. But yeah, so the next day we all woke up. We all ended up putting on our float suits that morning and repackaging our gear to go on the small plane. We call it the puddle jumper, but how many people did that thing sit? At least 16 or 20?
Yeah, it was like 16.
Yeah, so it wasn't as small as we thought it would be, but
it was a twin. It was a twin prop. I mean, it was a decent sized plane.
Yeah,
yeah. I know. Jeremy was pretty scared of it though.
Yeah, he's not a huge fan of flying, especially over water. But we made it work, and I think it didn't help that when we took off, it was completely cloudy in every direction, and Jeremy had no idea where the mountains were. So I know he was staring at the pilots, at some displays up there, and he was watching them just to make sure we weren't flying into the side of anything.
Why would he just like go over and grab the shoes?
Right. Like, I got this.
Didn't change anything.
Yeah, the people have flown it hundreds of times. But so we ended up getting to the airport, and it's a little bit different this time. You know, no TSA, nothing like that. And we just went down to this little hub in the airport. And at that point, we had to start weighing in all of our stuff. And it was a little different. Not only did we have to weigh it piece by piece, you know, we had to weigh ourselves, you know, and all the different gear that we had just to make sure that the plane had the accurate amount of weight and fuel. So that was a little different. But we did a hurry up and wait, you know, got all our stuff on, got to the airport. Got everything weighed, and then we had to sit there and wait for a couple hours and realize how fast that wearing our float suits there probably wasn't the best idea. Got a little warm.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. So then we, as we continued to carry on that day, our pilot came in. I'm pretty sure he was half my age. He was not very old.
Yeah, but he told us how many hours he had logged behind the plane, and I think Jeremy felt a little better about it. But yeah, he was really, really young.
Yeah, he was super young. That dude just lived to fly. That was his thing. So, which obviously more comfortable, but it would know. It was pretty cool. So we ended up flying north. What was the city we stopped in, Dale?
Bethel.
Bethel. You talking about Bethel real quick?
Which is way up north. I mean, Bethel is when you see that, when you're about to land, you look out. It's almost like that scene from Star Wars where it's all snow and ice. That's literally what it looked like. There's nothing there. I think I've been in ice houses on Mille Lacs that were bigger than this airport. All it was is 2x4s and pallets and a toilet, basically. So that was sure something. What'd you think, Eric?
I know that Beth was probably still talking about Jeremy leaving there.
Oh, yeah, they probably had to tear that building down.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Whatever he ate the day before was not ideal. Well, even Bethel, what was that was the last bit of flight we had left to St. Paul Island, Eric. What was going through your mind then?
I think I was like, let's just get there so we can do this.
We had pretty good weather coming into St. Paul Island. I mean, it was pretty clear. And I remember when we landed, you got out and you just started walking. You started just going. And there was no stopping yet. Everyone was trying to get bags off the plane, and there was guys coming in. There was a transition where Charles had people going out and coming in at the same time, and you were out running towards the road, and although there was not any like traffic, but it was just funny that you just kept going. And of course, like there, we have so many rules that we can and can't do, but yeah, you were running out of there.
Where were you going?
I probably thought I was going to go hunting by myself.
Oh, I love it.
All right. So when you stepped out then and you were starting to walk, like, reality sinking in. How was the weather?
It was just a little chilly. It wasn't like, holy crap, this is going to be really, really cold tomorrow.
Okay. Because I think that's like everybody's question is like, oh my God, it's Alaska. How cold was it? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like at that time, it was the same back at home, just a little bit more windier, right? Because you guys are obviously on an island surrounded by this ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people giving me crap. They're like, out of all the places in the world, Eric, you chose Alaska in January. I'm like, yeah, that's where I wanted to go. I don't want to go shoot any other animal. I want to pursue, you know, the most prized duck in the world.
Right. That's where you got to go to do it in North America. Yep. And, you know, honestly, the weather, like I lived in Oregon for some time and like ocean effect is a real thing. Like cold weather doesn't really stay there. I mean, it can, I think it's just like the wind that's more than anything, but yeah, it stayed decently warm that first day. I remember being in a sweatshirt and flying a drone around that first day. It was the clearest day we had. And overall, I think Charles had said we lucked out on weather overall. I mean, it just, the stars aligned for us. And that was the first star to align for us was those.
I know I took the non-drowsy Dramamine just to make sure I didn't get sick out there, but it made me like super, super tired. So I remember like halfway through the first day, I'm like, Charles, I got to go in. I'm going to like fall asleep here or get sick.
So Bethel, Alaska is a very interesting place. When you are flying in, when you get under the cloud coverage, you start to kind of see everything out the window. And the first thing that came to my mind is it's literally from the scene of Star Wars where everything is snow, ice. You see for miles, but it's just all white. And when you finally land there, the airport is just a giant, what we would consider an ice house on Mille Lacs, like a big sleeper house, just 2x4s and pallets. And it's got a bathroom and a computer with a map on it. And that's literally it. Eric, what did you think of it?
Just that we're getting closer, guys. We're almost to island.
Yeah, I don't think you even got off the plane. I think you just stayed in the plane ready to go.
Yeah.
I remember when we flew in that looking around us that the road systems were kind of what you saw on TV, you know, from when you were watching any of those Alaska shows. There's really no roads in or out. They're all frozen rivers and bodies of water that they're utilizing. You could see the roads on the ice that people are utilizing with their ATVs or snowmobiles, and you could see them running around out there. So it was kind of interesting to see the stuff that you've seen on TV about the remoteness and being close to the Arctic Circle is all right there. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, because are you in Bethel? Are you technically in the Arctic Circle at that point?
No, it's close though. It's super close. A little bit further north, and then you're finally in the Arctic Circle. But we hung out there for long enough for them to drop off mail and refuel, and then we were back in the air not that much longer after that, and it was another hour jaunt over to the St. Paul Island, and that was pretty good flying. You know, there was smooth sailing for the most part. I don't think we had any really bad weather we had to go through, so that was nice. You always hear about a little bit of the horror stories about how the weather can be in the area, and we were pretty fortunate where we didn't have any issues. And
how was the weather?
It was just a little like little chilly. It wasn't like, holy crap, this is going to be really, really cold tomorrow.
Okay. Cause I think that's like everybody's question is like, oh my God, it's Alaska. How cold was it? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like at that time it was the same back at home, just a little bit more windier, right? Because you guys are obviously on an island surrounded by this ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people giving me crap. They're like, out of all the places in the world, Eric, you chose Alaska in January. I'm like, yeah, that's where I wanted to go. I don't want to go shoot any other animal. I want to pursue, you know, the most prized duck in the world.
You know, honestly, the weather, like I lived in Oregon for some time and like ocean effect is a real thing. Like cold weather doesn't really stay there. I mean, it can, I think it's just like the wind that's more than anything, but, yeah, it stayed decently warm that first day. I remember being in a sweatshirt and flying a drone around that first day. It was the clearest day we had. And overall, I think Charles had said we lucked out on weather overall.
We'll return to the podcast in a moment. But first, we want to thank Best Defense Armory and Range for supporting our podcast. Veteran-owned, Best Defense Armory and Range is located in Forest Lake, Minnesota. Open to the public, they offer a shooting range, permit-to-carry classes, and firearm sales. visit them at bdarmoryandrange.com to see their inventory or book a class. Now, back to our podcast.
As we continued, you know, flying, and about an hour in, you know, you can see the little radar, the map the pilots had up front. You could see us getting closer, and finally, in the distance, you could see a speck on the horizon. What were you thinking at that point, Eric?
I think at that point, I was like, let's just land so I can get some sleep.
Yeah, you didn't sleep that day either.
No.
So flew to Anchorage, didn't nap, get there that night, didn't sleep that good. Then we get on the plane to get to St. Paul Island and still didn't nap. Excitement was still high. But just saw that island coming in and we're ready to touch down. And what were you thinking, Dale?
Oh, it was finally time. And the weather was good. It was, I was ready to get off that plane. I mean, I fly enough where I'm fine, but like, I haven't had that much excitement ready to land before, I don't think.
Well, I mean, yeah, 3 years, you know, since Eric, his injury occurred, you know, and working our way there, and 2.5 years since we told Eric we're doing this. And
right.
To be flying over this body of water and seeing this little volcanic rock come on the horizon. And then as we get closer, you know, you can see how blue the water is. You can start seeing the city of St. Paul. And it's just surreal to think that you're out in the middle of nowhere at that point. And there's no one within hundreds of miles, really. And
not really at all.
Right. And seeing the volcanic ash that's out there, the dust from years ago and blowing around the island and snow-capped smaller, I wouldn't even really call them mountains. They're, I don't know, what do you call them?
They're hills.
Giant hills. Yeah, but snow-capped, you know, pretty cool. Getting on the tarmac, we land, you know, and there's a group of people sitting there waiting. There's the hunters that Charles Somerville had that were just completing their trip and they were getting ready to get on the plane. And we got off, said hi to him, asked how things went. Excitement was there. And I think Eric tried to walk to the lodge at that point.
Yeah,
Yep.
Got off the airplane and you just started walking. You didn't know where you were going, but you were going to get there.
Where were you going?
I probably thought I was going to go hunting by myself.
Oh, I love it.
It was pretty funny. But then Charles Somerville came out and said hi to us all. And then we all went over to the lodge and got settled in, and gave us a tour. And it was kind of cool because Charles had an old ambulance that he utilized there for tours and getting people around. There's no windows in the back, so that makes it a little tough. But Eric got us set up front with a tour, and it was pretty incredible to get to go see some stuff. And what were your thoughts when we were out driving around on the island, seeing it for the first time?
I think when Charles just pointed out, like, there's a king, it's like, holy crap, they're actually here.
He did, and there was a lot of kings out there rafted up on the water. What else did we see out there? We saw some old squaw, bunch of kings.
There's harlequins out there.
Yep, there's harlequins. I mean, there's a bunch of stuff we saw. A lot of marine seals. Wildlife, too. Yep, we saw some seals and sea lions, right? Sea lions?
Yes. Yep.
It was pretty cool. Trying to think here now. So we had this other group of guys that were with us that were pretty phenomenal too. You know, you never know who you're going to be with and how things are going to work out. But we had four gentlemen that were from the southern states, a couple from Texas. And then I think one was in Louisiana. Alabama. Is that right? Alabama. So they were super cool to be with. Actually, we got to get to know them pretty well. But so anything after the tour for the day, we really started trying to hone in on what the plan was for the next day. And that was, it was pretty exciting. So we got back, had a little meeting with everyone, had some dinner. We got ready for the hunt. Did you sleep that night at all, Eric, or not?
Yeah, I believe I did. I think like the assignment finally was kind of wearing off that we're here and it's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. And then the work started, you know, so the next morning we woke up and everything was prepped, and you know, we had two boats between the two groups. We had Uncle Paul and Eric in one boat with Dale filming, and then in our boat we had Jeremy, myself, and our guide and our other camera guy Jeff. And that was all to, you know, try to get some decent footage of birds being shot, hopefully capture Eric getting his bird. And in preparation of that morning, you know, in the waves that were out there, what did we do that morning, Eric? Taking some of those pills. Yes, sir. The Dramamine.
I took a non-drowsy Dramamine to try to like kind of combat the waves and stuff, but I don't know. It affected me really badly because I got so drowsy halfway through the first morning. I told Charles, like, I got to head in because I'm getting sick out here. I was giving Jeremy a hard time. I was calling him a drug dealer because I'm like, I don't know what you gave me, but it made me feel like crap.
Paul had a quick morning too.
He did have to, and we weren't sure how Eric's TBI was going to handle the waves. You know, we had, 6-7 foot waves that morning, but I mean, they weren't aggressive. They were casual rollers, but you never know how someone's reactions will be if you don't have injuries in the ocean. But when you have a TBI, you know, how is that reaction going to, how are you going to handle those waves?
Even Paul puked that day. He goes, I've been out in Lake of the Woods and out in the ocean in Mexico, and I've never thrown up out there. Because that man does not puke very often.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a different animal out there, you know. And I mean, we were a good ways offshore. It wasn't too far out, but Eric took his Dramamine. It was supposed to be non-drowsy. We got out there and just knocked him out. He was tired, you know, not only from probably staying awake a couple of days there, but also, you know, the Dramamine can have an effect on people, especially with the TBI. And Uncle Paul decided to hurl over the edge of the boat. And he was incredibly embarrassed and felt bad for him. But at the same time, like, that's life and how the Bering Sea is. That was another very large thing to me. That was incredible to think that we're out in the Bering Sea, like absolutely insane, to be out there and seeing the ducks start flying. That morning, Uncle Paul shot what, two kings or one?
Yeah, two.
He got two that morning. And then, obviously, Eric not feeling well. He didn't have an opportunity to shoot. We're just glad someone harvested some kings that day. That was great news. And Jeremy had shot a couple other birds. They were not kings. I think he got a couple old squaw that morning. And then we headed in for the day, and Eric went down, took a rest, and we tried to reevaluate what we can do to help him out for the second day. And Dale, what do we do at that point?
Well, we figured out that some of the difficulties we were having were, we were starting to really learn, you know, what Eric can and can't do, right? Or can't do as well. And I think, Eric, remind me, is it your left eye that you can't really see that well out of? Or is it?
No, it's his right eye, left arm and leg.
Got it. Okay, so you... We were starting to learn, like, you know, because you'd made mention, you're like, because I remember Charles saying, Eric, get ready to shoot. And you're like, I can't see him. You got to remember, those birds are flying 40, 50 miles an hour downwind. And we're hitting, I think Charles told us that it was 3 out of 10 on the difficulty scale on the waves that day. He said, this is perfect weather. It was not that bad. And we were rocking just kind of barely, like 3 or 4 foot rollers in the big boat, because we were getting out there a little bit. We weren't in the washing machine, as he calls it, right, in the surf. But when you put all those things together, you got birds flying faster than your typical mallard or even a teal. You got rolling waves. I mean, Eric, you can't see that well. You can't, you know, you're not able to move like what Chris or I could. So you put all those things together, it makes one very difficult hunt. And we're learning that the first day. So the second day, after the first day, we kind of got together, and Charles and the guides were like, what can we do? There's a couple different things. So Charles and the guides were planning on for what we're going to do for the second day. And the second day, they came up together, and they came up with an idea of putting the tripod gun mount on the front of the boat and having the decoys out the front of the boat, and then basically having us go backwards so that the string of decoys is in front of you. So when those birds go into decoy, you have a good shot at them. And in the trailer, if you remember, Charles talked about in the 21 years of him doing it, no one's ever shot a king actually sitting down on the boat. people, that doesn't make sense for a lot of people, but why that is so important is because your body takes the waves, your knees take the waves. So you stay kind of level if you are standing up or leaning up against the boat, but it's sitting in there, you're taking all those waves. So that movement is so much more drastic. So when he's saying how difficult it is to sit down, he's right, because your body can't adjust for that wave. And what we found out is when we got out there on the second day, you seemed a little more cheery and not so drowsy. And the biggest thing that what I think was the hardest part for you, Eric, was staying awake. I mean, bless the hearts of the people from Strike Master and Rapala, but what we didn't realize is those float suits were so warm and the rocking of the waves, you're being put to sleep like a baby. I couldn't tell you how many times I was holding you up behind you. I was holding your chair forward because it was just kept sliding. I'm holding this camera trying to film, but I'm also stopping your chair from sliding back at me. And then on top of that, you were sleeping. I have a good hour of GoPro footage of you going like this. And so, you know, on day two, we had all these things put together, the tripod mount in the front, the ducks are out the front, we're holding you up, and then you're sitting there snoring. But I think that all kind of worked out because you needed every bit of energy when the time happened on day two. So, Eric, tell us how you felt on day two while we were out there.
I just was really blessed that the accommodations have been made so I could, you know, I felt more confident that I was going to be able to get one. And I could see what was going on much better and everything.
Yeah, we had another good day of weather. Like Charles says, a 3 out of 10. And I kind of fast forward. So out there, we have the power hour, right? We get out there, the sun comes up, and it's go time. Those birds are rolling around trying to find a place to feed. And we were seeing birds. We were shooting at birds. We just couldn't get one to land right where you could see it. And so what we ended up doing after, because the power hour ended, we hadn't got one yet. And we looked over towards shore because that's where they ended up going to go feed. Cause they can dive up to 80 feet. So they're down there eating mussels or whatever, and sea urchins. So we looked over towards shore. Charles, about 300, 400 yards away, Charles saw a bunch of hens fly up. There's probably a good 6 hens. And he immediately turned the boat and said, "We got to go over there." He goes, "The fact that we saw all those hens and no drakes makes me wonder that Drake's got to be still over there." So we started pedaling that way. Eric's snoozing. And once we get there, we started kind of got to the spot where those hens took off. And Charles immediately says, "Keep your eyes out. Keep your eyes out." And I didn't even know what he meant by that. I'm not a duck hunter, so I just press record because I'm just like, anything could happen. I have no idea what's happening, but anything could happen.
Right.
So we start looking around, and I think I spotted it. Because everyone's looking out. I was just looking in general because I didn't know what I was looking for. 50 yards from us, a drake popped up out of the water. He must have been down feeding, right? And immediately I slap your shoulder. I say, "Eric, get up and get on that gun." Because that gun is sitting up there like a gunner on a tank almost. I know nothing about that. Chris could probably tell us a lot about that. But
Yeah. The USS Matson.
Yes. And Eric got up on that gun and you said, "Where is it?" I said, and I was basically aiming your gun to where the I'm sitting there trying to film and aim you at the same time. And I got you on it and you were like, "All right, ready." And Charles said, the second that thing starts flying, you start blasting. And at that moment, Eric, what do you remember? What do you think?
When you spotted it, like, what did you think?
I think I thought, "Holy shit, this is my chance and it's go time."
It certainly was goat time. What happened?
Two shots, and then I just saw it hit the water, and I'm like, everything I've waited and worked so hard to do just came true right there. And I think Charles was just elated that I got it, because he grabbed the radio and he yells on there, "The eagle has landed," and everybody knew what that meant.
Yeah, man, it was such an emotional moment for everyone too. You know, Jeremy and I and Jeff were off in a boat elsewhere, and we couldn't even see you guys. And we heard the shots, and we sat there for a second. We're like, "Okay, was that it?" And then we heard Charlie come over the radio with the eagles landed, and nothing but tears in our boat, man. Like just the relief, like and the happiness. Like we came all this way to get Eric here, to get his bird. All the time spent with Eric and his family and doing his rehab and working his way to get here, and it all finally came together. And I mean, I'm not a duck hunter either, but damn, I mean, Bering Sea, you know, 7-foot waves. You're hunting on three different
axes.
Thank you. So, you know, a large boat that's tippy on large waves, and then yourself in the boat trying to level off on top of that. I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah, you got to put the right lead on there to, you know, accommodate for the waves, and then your boat going and the wind behind them and stuff.
Yeah, how many times did we watch people shoot directly into the side of a wave when they thought they were going to hit a bird? I mean, it happens. I mean, the swells come up and you're tracking a bird, and all of a sudden there's a wave there. So you're putting a bunch of BBs in the bunch of water. I mean, so it all just came together, you know, and just hear the eagles landed and have a minute to sit there and soak it in and just share it with everyone that Eric got his bird, especially after everything he's been through. Like, phenomenal.
And then to finally get it in my hands and look at it and how beautiful it was, I was like, it's all worth it. All that work, all that, the effort and support from everybody. This is what we came here for. And here it is right here in my hands in front of me.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. You know, and one of the things that I absolutely love is our camera guy, Jeff, brought his drone with, and he tossed it up in the air right away afterwards and went and found him and got some phenomenal video of Eric holding his bird right away afterwards and holding it up in the air, and just such cool footage, you know, to see you out in the Bering Sea and all this awesome gear and the things that people helped out with. And then Charles there and Dale, and you got that king in your hand, man, like phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. And it was so just moving.
I felt like the Lion King moment where they're holding up the
Simba.
Yeah.
Right. It's pretty much what it was like. No, it was just absolutely incredible. You know, and that was obviously the highlight of everything, you know, and memories that will never go away. And now you got it. Yes. And it's absolutely beautiful. And the best part is, you know, everyone gets to relive that moment with you, you know, not only be able to see the progress that was made throughout the injury and the rehab, but also gets to watch everything that you've been through with your family, and gets to relive that moment of you harvesting that bird. And that's going to be forever memorialized in a video, which is amazing. And I'm partial to Rogue, but some pretty damn good footage that we have out there too. So
appreciate that.
Yeah. So Eric gets his bird, you know, we're all jacked. We slowly head back in. And at that point, you know, I think that, Eric, did you feel like there was a huge weight lifted from your shoulders at that point? You know, finally getting the harvest bird.
Yeah. Why? I just knew that Charles was doing anything he could to make it happen, and that it finally happened. He was like, "Oh, thank goodness! You know, we got him out here. Now he's finally been successful at achieving what he wanted to do out here."
Yeah. No, it's, I think all of us kind of felt that. You know, it's, there, you know, there's times, you know, and I'm sure you felt it too, like, am I going to be able to do this, you know, with your recovery and everything like that, you know? And we were just determined to try to get you to do it and get you there and give you the opportunity, and you made it happen. And I'm just glad that we had good people around us, to include Charles and his other guides, because they adapted and overcame, and, you know, they did some things that were untraditional for their types of hunts. And it was phenomenal. But we got back to camp that day, and we all kind of had a beverage, and all had a sigh of relief and excitement, and celebrated And it was a great day. I will never forget it. That's for sure. So I appreciate you sharing it with all of us, Eric and Megan. I appreciate you letting us borrow them for that. It was pretty incredible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He was definitely tired when he came back home.
Totally. Yeah, I believe it. I was tired when I came back home. But yeah, so, you know, kind of the cool part too is we're going to switch tracks a little bit here is Megan actually went on an adventure of her own while we were up there, which is pretty cool. Do you want to talk about your trip too, Megan?
Yeah. So I went to, I believe you pronounce it like Guama Island, and it's a an island where Charles and Helen actually go during their off season and spend a few months there to relax. And it takes about 12 hours to get there and three different planes and a boat ride. And I had a little hiccup the day of my first day of traveling there. The waves were too big, so the boat wasn't able to go out. So I had to find a place to stay the first night, actually two nights, because I came in the same day you guys left, and then the ferry doesn't leave on the weekend, so I had to wait till Monday to go out. And by the time I got to Guama Island, you know, it was just a whole nother world. It reminded me of Jurassic Park, just untouched land, very rich green aqua blue waters. They have like the volcano underneath the ocean, so the sand has like glitter in it. The vegetation, the food is amazing. The hospitality of the natives that lived there are just so humbling and kind. It was a great week-long vacation by myself. We went hiking to a couple waterfalls, went snorkeling, seeing sharks, octopuses, stingrays, and yeah, overall, wonderful, wonderful experience. I would definitely go back, and it was a great opportunity for both of us to just take some time apart and reconnect with ourselves, you know.
Eric got to go hang with the boys out in harsh weather climate, and you got to go chill on a beach and unplug.
Yes.
That's good. So when you were down there, I know we were checking in with you occasionally, you know, just to see how things were going. And what were your thoughts when you first heard about him getting his bird?
I remember getting the message. I was sitting in the hammock reading my book, and I literally like threw the book down, sat up, looked at my phone. I was like, no way. Like already, like it's the second day and he already got it. And I was just so excited, like, cause I was nervous. I was like, oh my God, what happens if he doesn't get it, you know? And actually, did I not? Cause I've said this the last couple of times you've gone duck hunting. I'm like, but did he really shoot it? Or did right. did one of you guys shoot it? And then like, just say that he shot it. I mean,
right.
And then you guys are like, no, he like really shot it. I'm like, but did he? And you're like, no, he did. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Sorry, I watched that footage like 10 times over and over again to make sure. Cause I'm like, from a video perspective, like I want it to be this, I want it to be a clean kill too. Right. Like,
yeah.
One, it's easier for us to edit that way. And two, then it's not like we're living a lie, but like we replayed that slow motion every single time. It was like,
oh my God, I cannot wait to see it. I cannot wait to see it.
Trigger BBs. And I was like, yeah, it matches up.
Yeah.
Dude peppered it.
Yeah, he got it. You know, and then I think didn't Uncle Paul help out at the very end just to make sure?
Yeah, well, everyone, so like even like our ducks, like the second, because they're divers, it's just what happens. You hit them, Their fail safe is to go underwater. Like that's their protection is underwater. And so the second you hit one, if it's wounded and it goes underwater, you ain't getting that thing back.
No.
So it is what I would call industry standard to hit it on the water a couple of times, just because you want to make sure that thing is floating and not alive. So yeah, Paul put the nail in the coffin and it was time to pick it up.
Yeah. Eric definitely hit it twice and Paul just made sure that he got his bird back. But no, it was definitely Eric shooting that dropped that bird, which was absolutely amazing. And like Dale said, the footage that we have of it tells no lies, you know, so it's pretty awesome. But no, it was cool. I was glad you got to break away and have some fun down there. And
I just can't believe it's here still. I keep looking at it like, holy crap, how far did we go to get that bird?
Oh, man, the other side of the world.
Yeah.
It was kind of cool, too, because, right, we were up, you know, in the Bering Sea, and then you had Megan down in a different hemisphere, you know, like completely. You know, it was just wild.
Completely polar opposite.
Finally, yeah. Jeremy got a bird that he can mount, because I've been hunting with him for so long, and he always gets one. And we took one there, and the taxidermist was like, well, I want to do this position with it, but the wing was broken, so he couldn't do it.
Oh, really? Was that one of his kings?
One of his Widgeon shot.
Oh, the Widgeon. Got it. Yeah, he told me that I think he had it donated to for someone to do for like a bird mount with the dog.
Yep.
Where the dog was holding in the mouth. Yeah, that's pretty cool. But yeah, so we concluded his hunt that day. We had a celebration. You know, we sat, we thanked the guides, had a beverage with them, hung out with our friends from the South, had a good time with them too. Absolutely phenomenal stand-up people that we were with that were very supportive and were just as anxious to hear about Eric and his hunt as the rest of us were to see Eric and his bird. So it was pretty cool. You know, these guys to show up and be supportive like they were was great. Then day three for the hunting, Eric was wiped and we asked Eric if he wanted to go back out. And I believe at the time, Eric, your words were, I'm tired. You guys go hunt and have fun. That sound accurate?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So Eric stayed back on day three to catch up on his sleep. And the rest of us went to the north end of the island and we got to hunt birds that day, but in a less traditional aspect. We were in dinghies, 15 foot little rubber boats,
Zodiacs.
And some pretty Zodiacs. Yep. And some heavy surf. And that was pretty wild. That was Dale's very first duck hunt ever.
Well, successful duck hunt.
Yeah, successful duck hunt. And then Jeremy and Dale are at a boat. Why don't you talk about that experience?
That was absolutely insane. You know, when you think of like a duck hunt in like in Minnesota, you know, if you're a rich hunter, you got a nice duck boat, big, you know, mud motor, right, Eric?
Yep.
And you're going out there and it's not so bad, but there's no, you got wind. That's probably the only thing that's really going against you out there. Well, in Alaska, you have a 14 foot dinghy, right? It's rubber, it's water all over the place. You're out of the water. Yeah. You're basically, to get out into the water, you have to get wet. Like, there's no such thing as being dry in that. And it's what, 30 degrees out. It's windy. There's 10 foot swells. You're getting pulled out there. You're in the surf. So you imagine like trying to like ride a surfboard to get over the waves. Well, that's what you got to do but you're trying to stay warm, and there's just no such thing as warm in that. You're freezing the entire time. But like, you see the decoys, it's just a funny way of hunting, because when you're at the bottom of the swell, your decoys are at the top. So the ducks, when they're flying, they see just the decoys for that split second. Then it changes, then it goes back, then it changes, then it goes back. And those ducks come flying at you, and you're just sitting low on the water. And when the guy tells you to shoot, you just pop up, and the birds are right there in your face. And they're flying at 40 miles an hour. You got to lead them like 10 feet, even though you're only 20 feet away from them. It is the craziest thing. And I got to use the Benelli that Eric was gifted from Benelli, which was awesome. I felt like I couldn't miss that day. Jeremy and I were shooting into clouds of old squaws and dropping four of them. It was just like the craziest thing I've ever witnessed. And I think I was frozen. Like, I remember getting back on the beach and being like, I'm straight frozen. Like, I could not move my arms. The second you got out of the water, the wind started hitting you and everything started to freeze up.
And the adrenaline kind of starts to wear off.
Yes. And now I'm frozen. But I remember, I think I'd shot 2 king drakes, 1 king hen, 2 old squaws, and 1 harlequin. So I came back telling Charlie, it's the St. Paul Island Grand Slam. It was all 3. So I was super stoked, and I am grateful for you, Eric, for one, shooting your bird on day 2, and 3, letting us go for it.
That you were able to get all that.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy that your first duck hunt, you get the most of, or the hardest duck to get in the world, essentially.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm super grateful. It's just one of the trips that I'll probably never forget. And I know my career is pretty early yet, but I don't know. I don't know how you top that. I really
just
don't.
Just keep on going. Get the rest of them.
Right.
Well, so to switch gears, I know now that everything's kind of all settled and the dust has settled, obviously the doc hasn't come out yet, but now what, Eric? I know we had talked about the 41. I know on the island you had said, yeah, I don't really need to go after anymore, but I think there's just so much more. You're young, man. There's so much more to live. And going after the 41 is just, I think you might as well, right?
I think I have to now, looking around my basement. I have about half of them, but there's still like 12 or 13 I have to get, I believe.
So, Eric, why don't you explain what the 41 is? What is it? Is it the Ultimate Waterfall Challenge? Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Why don't you explain that, Eric? What is it?
Essentially, all the ducks you can get in North America.
It's 41 total, right?
Yep. And you harvest them, and you take a picture of them, and then you send it into a committee, and they review it and say, yep, you have accomplished the North American Waterfall Challenge, and they give you a certificate and acknowledge you.
And I think, is Charles on that committee as well?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, as we're sitting down here looking around, he literally has like half of them already. So why not? Why not keep going for that title?
And you get to go to some pretty cool places to go get some other ones too.
Yeah, where else would you have to go to get some of the harder ones?
Mexico.
Mexico, yep.
Where else? Maine or no?
East Coast.
Yeah, probably Maine. Yep. You have to get the other eiders still too, right?
Yeah, the common eiders.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Pacific one?
Yep, Pacific, common, king. The other hard one I think is, well, obviously the cinnamon teal is one of the hardest.
Yeah, Paul's already got that. Somehow he got that around here.
Yeah, that's.
He's got like a horseshoe up his.
Right?
Paul's got like a horseshoe up his ass. He's shot an old squaw around here, too.
Yeah, that's time spent in the field, though. Those boots and waders have miles on them. But I think there's some other ones that you can go harvest, too, up with Charlie up in Cold Bay. Some of the geese and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, I mean, that'd be an awesome thing to do, Eric, and I'd love to go do a couple more with you. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But So pretty cool thing, too, is we got back from the trip, you know, everyone kind of unwound for a little while, and one of the things that we did was we got Eric's bird up to a taxidermist right away. We had Jerry up at Flyway Taxidermy donate his bird mount. So we hurry up and got that done. I don't think Eric even knew his bird was gone at that point in time. Yeah, we got it up to Jerry, and Jerry had it mounted within, what, 6-7 weeks?
Yeah, I thought it was like sooner than that.
I think it was 2 weeks, but then the habitat that it was in, they had to finish. And for the listeners, you can go to our website or our social media, and you can see the photos with Eric, or even Eric's got him on his social media, and so does Megan. But his bird that is completely and fully mounted got done in record time. Usually, you know, these mounts take sometimes years to get back. And at our annual banquet this last March, we actually had it there on display, but no one could see it. Rogue had completed the trailer for the documentary, which we aired for the first time at the banquet. And then the bird was hidden underneath a blanket on the stage, and we brought Eric up there to reveal it to him. So, Eric, did you have any idea that's what was on stage?
No, I had no idea the Texans even had it. I think I asked somebody, I'm like, we got to get that duck up there, guys, so we can get it started. And they're like, oh, we'll take care of it. Well, had I known it was already done.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So what did you think when you saw it? Like when we had you turn around and we pulled the blanket off of it? No, it was pretty cool because Charles Somerville came to the banquet to surprise you and say hi. And so did Jerry, the taxidermist, came up there who mounted it for you. Like, what were your thoughts when you got to see those guys and see the bird?
It was exactly what I wanted, because I think I told somebody, like, I want it flying over a wave with its mouth open. And I look at it, I'm like, it's exactly what I pictured.
Yep. I remember you sending me the picture, and I gave it to Jerry, and so did Dale.
Were you surprised to, like, see it? Like, wait, what? It's here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty incredible. I think the whole room cried that night.
I got in trouble.
What did you get in trouble
for? Because Sam saw how big the bird was and how many I had. And she was like, wait, it all started to click. I was like, thanks, Eric.
Yes, honey, we're going to have an entire room dedicated to these ducks.
Yeah, just a giant corner. That's all. That thing is huge. I don't think people realize. I don't think people realize how big that is.
I think we could say like the body is as big as a football.
Yeah,
I'd say that's probably right.
Yeah, it's like as big as a football, but then I don't even know. We should have measured
how
long it was. The wingspan on it is probably like well over 24 inches.
So
yeah,
in comparison to an actual like a mallard, I've never even held a dead mallard. That's how bad that I am at this.
Where is your mallard?
What's the size, Mattson, Eric, what is like the size comparison between a mallard and a king?
Is that a mallard right over there?
I don't have a mallard down here, honey.
Oh, you don't? Okay. He asked you, what's the size between a mallard and a king?
I would say that a king is pretty comparable in size.
Oh, it is.
Body size and wingspan and everything. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. King's a bit bigger. I would say the king's a bit bigger, but.
What size is that over there?
Which one? That red one. Oh, that's a canvasback.
It definitely is very, very comparable to a canvasback. I mean, that bird looks massive over there.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, diver birds, they're pretty chunky for the most part. Yeah. Not all of them, but some of them. But yeah, it was pretty incredible.
King eiders are a hardy bird, though, to live in those elements all year round.
Right. Yeah, and that lobe on the front of the beak that they have, too, is very unique, you know. And we had some more juvenile ones that had less of a lobe on the front beak or the forehead, you know, and as they get older, that lobe grows. So they're able to age birds pretty easily based on that lobe size, which is kind of cool. And Eric got a very mature one, so that's even more cool. But, you know, these birds really aren't, they don't have a natural predator out there, you know, and they migrate pretty heavily during that time of the year in January, and there was kings everywhere. I mean, clouds of kings, but then there's also clouds of old squaw and clouds of harlequin everywhere, and we even saw some scoters out there. So it was really, really incredible and beautiful to be out there and experience the wildlife that was out there and be able to hang out with friends, you know, with Eric, Jeremy, Paul, Dale and Jeff. You know, it was just phenomenal to be able to be out there and experience that together. And
the only predators were the boys from Minnesota.
Yeah. But it was just irreplaceable memories that I will always hold on to. And I'll be honest, like, Eric, I hope someday that you and I can go back and, you know, get to see it again and reminisce about the first hunt, and maybe we can drop some more birds another time. No, it wasn't cheap, but we can figure it out.
Go to Mexico and get a cinnamon teal. I'll come with.
Yeah, let's go do that. I'd be down.
You boys ever heard of Mexico?
Yeah. We'll bring the wives with and then go chill while we go duck hunting.
Absolutely.
I like it. But no, so he got his bird, brought it home, good to go. And You know, Dale's and Rogue is chugging away on the documentary. We're looking at a release later in 2023. We're thinking around Thanksgiving, early December, just for some safe buffer room here. We're looking at the next Legacy Trip recipient too, and I know I've spoken about it several times, but Eric and Megan are going to help pick that person. Right now we're down to five people that are going to be able to pick that. I have one more individual to speak with here, which by the time this podcast comes out, it will probably already be done. And I'm hoping to have the information over to Eric and Megan in the next 2 weeks. Again, by the time the podcast comes out, they'll probably already be picked. And we're looking to see how we can integrate the next individual's story, maybe as a teaser at the end of the doc for Eric, but we don't know yet. I mean, there's a lot of question marks.
It probably won't be as extreme as art is. This legacy hunt, though.
Yeah, you know, yours is hard to beat when it comes to that, man.
Yeah. When you picked it, everyone was looking around like, what is this?
Right. Hey, man, we got the hard one out of the way, and you got your bird behind you, so we says we don't suck at what we do, at least.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm excited for you guys to pick, and I think it'll be pretty awesome for you guys to be able to meet the next person, you know, and get to hang out, get to know them, and be a part of it, and definitely, just because this trip is over, not mean that you guys are not involved in anything else down the road. We will continue to be family and involve you in all the legacy trips and everything else that we have going associated with it. So you guys are going to be stewards of that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yes, sir.
Like I said, I still tell people, hey, come over and see my King Mount whenever you can.
Man, maybe we should bring it to your premiere too. That'd be pretty cool.
That'd be awesome.
Get it on the pedestal and put a couple of lights on it at your premiere. So we're hoping to do a premiere of the video. We're going to do it either in Owatonna or Albert Lea, likely. We still have more discussion on that. Then we're going to have a couple more viewings, one in the East Metro for the Minnesota Woodbury area, and probably one in St. Cloud. So we got some things we're figuring out with that, but that'll be an opportunity for people to come and watch it in a theater setting. But then we're hoping to have it on a streaming network as well, which we'll put out more information as we get closer on that, but I'm excited for it. I can't wait. I think it's going to be awesome, and I can't wait for that night to hang out with you guys and watch it for the first time with you.
I'm going to dress up. Watch it.
Are you?
I'm going to dress up really, really fancy that night, yeah.
You going to do tuxedo?
Heck yeah. Red carpet premiere, baby.
Can you wear a top hat for me at least?
If you'd like me to, I'll wear whatever.
With his pimp cane.
Hell yeah. Walking stick. Gator skin shoes with your tux.
Oh, man.
Well, it's going to be great. And, man, it's been an experience, and I appreciate you both and really value your guys' friendship. And
we appreciate the opportunity that you guys, you know, did for Eric. So it's awesome. Once in a lifetime opportunity.
Yep.
No thanks needed. I've made friends and family. That's all we need. Dale, anything else?
I'm good, man.
Eric, what were you going to say?
I was going to say it's here.
And it's beautiful.
Rise absolutely and shine, beautiful. Cider time.
Yes, sir. That was his
That was my morning trip. Yep. I told Paul that every morning, I'm like, rise and shine, it's cider time. And he'd like sit up and be like, all right, let's do this, Eric.
Yeah. Well, we can't let Paul skip out on what happened on the way home.
Oh, yeah.
We can't forget that. We almost missed that. So you alluded to it earlier. We get back to Anchorage, and we go to have dinner that night, and I'm exhausted, and we had an extra almost a full day in Anchorage the next day, and Paul, Dale, and Jeff decided that they were going to go hang out with our southern boys in town. And I knew that sounded like a hangover, so I did not go with. Yeah, Dale and Eric, I'll let you guys talk about what happened that night.
Yeah, we went out to the carousel. The only reason why I remember that is because they gave me a bunch of stickers, apparently. And I put them all over my Pelican cases. Like, wherever I travel, I put stickers. And so that's the only reason why I remember. But we were out and about, and the carousel treated us well, and then we went to a pizza place. The only reason why we all know that is because of my Snapchat story, and Paul was convinced that we never had pizza.
But he probably ate a whole pizza.
Oh, yeah.
And what size did he get?
He got an extra medium pizza.
Oh, Paul.
And he didn't believe he was there. I'm like, Paul, they have camera footage of you to prove it. You were there, man.
I remember walking down the hallway after breakfast with him, and Dale's like, yeah, man, you put away that pizza. And Paul's like, we didn't have pizza last night. He goes, no, we did. He goes, no, we didn't. Dale's like, no, it's right here. And he goes, man, I ate a whole pizza last night. Dude, it was – and the incredible part is he had no hangover. Like you said, he doesn't get hangovers.
He's a beast.
Man, that was cool. But it was fun. He's a good guy to get to know and hang out with. And I can see why you guys get along so well. You know, pretty awesome relationship you do have. He's the man. All right. Well, if you guys have any last comments or anything like that.
No, I just thank you guys.
Love you guys and thank you for everything. And whenever you need us next, let us know. We'll be there in a second, okay?
Totally. I appreciate that. We love you guys. And just want to let our listeners know to keep an eye on all our social media. Go follow Eric and Megan. Follow Rogue, any of us, HHO. And you're going to see a lot more updates as we get closer to the premiere, the release date of Eric's documentary. Showing everything that he's been through, him and his family and the struggles, but how what the outdoors can do to help people as well. As I think that this has been a very large goal for him, and it's helped him to be able to work towards a goal for his rehab. And please just keep an eye on everything and share it with whoever you can when you get a moment. So, but for this episode, that's all we have today. So thank you for tuning in and listening. And as Dan Meyer would always say, is we'll see you out in the water or on in the woods.
All right. Love you guys.
Love you, buddy. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hero Outdoors podcast. For more information, visit our website at hometownherooutdoors.org.